Our guest this hour calls herself a conscientious objector to the Affordable Care Act, and we'll find out why she did not sign up for health insurance by this week's March 31st deadline. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, April 2nd. And we would like to hear your questions for her and your views on whether the ACA will be good for health care or not, or whether you, like our guest, would rather have a single-payer health care system, a Medicare-for-all approach. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Dr. Margaret Flowers, a pediatrician and national board advisor for a national health care program. She recently wrote an essay called Why I Am a Conscientious Objector to the Affordable Care Act. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for being with us. So you are uninsured. Why did you choose not to sign up for health care or insurance under the Affordable Care Act?
Well, I have been uninsured for a couple of years now, and when it came down to the deadline, I had a choice to make, and I don't qualify for any of our public programs, Medicaid or Medicare. So it would mean giving my money to the private health insurance industry. And I've been fighting for 10 years to eliminate that industry. They're really one of the biggest problems with our healthcare system in the United States. So I just couldn't in good conscience give them my money. And I don't, I'm not going to pay the tax penalty either, because we're transferring the largest amount of public dollars to a private industry ever through the subsidizing of private health insurance. It'll be nearly $1 trillion going directly into their pockets, while their model is to use that money to hold on to as much of it as they can and not pay for care.
Well, then aren't you, if you don't pay the tax penalty, aren't you facing jail, or aren't you afraid of the consequences?
Actually, I'm not, because when they put that tax penalty in, they didn't really put an enforcement mechanism into that, so I don't think that that's going to be a huge risk. But really, I feel so strongly about eliminating the private insurance industry. I've been very active daily, working to educate people about single-payer and have, you know, engaged in civil disobedience as well against the insurance industry. And I just can't in good conscience do this, knowing that we're the only industrialized nation that uses this market-based approach towards healthcare, and it's been really an experiment for the past 40 years that has failed, greatly failed, and we do know what the solution is. We do have the resources here to create a real health system, and so I'm going to continue to fight for that.
What is the problem with buying private health insurance?
So private health insurance's model, as I said, their bottom line is to make a profit for their investors, and they've actually done very well since the Affordable Care Act passed in 2010. Their stocks have doubled. And so even though the Affordable Care Act, you know, you hear so much in the kind of the mainstream media about all these new regulations that are supposed to change the private insurance industry, it really hasn't changed their bottom line. And so they've been very active in They were active in helping to write the law, and they've been active in helping to write the regulations so that they found ways to work around all of these regulations. So having health insurance, private health insurance in the United States, is not protective. It still leaves patients unable to afford care and vulnerable to bankruptcy if they have a serious accident or illness.
But isn't private health insurance better than no insurance at all?
Well, the studies do show that people who are uninsured tend to do better than people who are not insured. But I'm concerned about the direction that we're going, because the Affordable Care Act has really lowered the bar on what is considered to be acceptable coverage. And we've seen that now that the private insurance companies are required to take anybody who applies for a policy to them, you know, they can't deny people based on pre-existing conditions. What they're doing is narrowing their networks so that they leave out 30 or 70% of the local hospitals from their network. They restrict the number of health professionals, doctors, and others that are in the network. And what this does is it pushes people out of the network, so that if you have a serious illness like a cancer and the local cancer center is not covered, then you, if you want to go there, you're going to have to pay 100% of that cost. Or if you have an accident and you're taken to a hospital that's not in the network, again, you have to bear 100% of the cost. What we're seeing when we look at the trends in the U.S. over the last, well, since 2008, is that fewer people are using health care services because of the financial burden of that. They just don't have the money in this current economy to pay for those services. And there's a lot of out-of-pocket costs that you have to pay up front before your insurance kicks in.
Yeah. But isn't the situation somewhat better under the ACA than it was before?
I would say not, looking at the big picture. I mean, it's certainly, you know, there's certainly some positive aspects of it, but if you look at the overall picture, what this has done is it's moving us further in the direction of privatizing our healthcare system. It's propping up and supporting the very industry that's the problem. And it's also undermining our public insurances. So Medicaid is being privatized, Medicare is being more privatized, it's degrading the quality of our employer-based insurances. Now they have a lower bar to fall to, so it's kind of a race to the bottom in coverage. We're seeing employers are shifting more of the costs of insurance onto their employees and moving many of them into the exchanges where the coverage is lower.
Mm-hmm. You say, though, you've been fighting for a single-payer healthcare system for a decade now. There were people who wanted a single-payer system when the ACA finally came about. People say it's politically impossible. So what good does it do to be a conscientious objector?
Well, they want us to believe it's politically impossible. And the truth is that what's politically feasible changes based on what the people do. So one of the reasons that, I chose to be a conscientious objector because personally I just couldn't give my money to the industry that I'm fighting. That was my personal decision. I'm not asking others to do it, but there are others who actually joined me when they found out that I'm doing that. I think what's important to bring attention to is that we need to be having a fundamental discussion in this country that isn't happening, and that's whether we want to treat healthcare as a commodity, something that's sold in the marketplace, so that people are only able to get as much healthcare as they can afford. Or do we want to treat healthcare like a public good, something that everybody needs, as every other industrialized nation does, and create a system that's publicly financed, that's universal, that removes barriers to people getting the care that they need? And as I said, we already have all of the resources in this country to do that. We're spending even 2.5 times more per person per year on healthcare than these other nations do that cover everyone. We have excellent health facilities. So we need to have that discussion and decide that if we as a people think that healthcare is a public good, then we need to organize and pressure Congress. There is a bill in Congress that we can pressure them to pass.
Well, we'll talk more about that in just a moment, and we'll welcome your questions and your views for Dr. Margaret Flowers. She's a pediatrician, National Board Advisor for Physicians for a National Health Program. And she is a conscientious objector to the Affordable Care Act. She is uninsured, and she did not sign up for health insurance under the ACA. The deadline to sign up for health insurance under the ACA has passed. So, what would you like to ask? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 19 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, April 2nd. We are talking with Dr. Margaret Flowers, who recently wrote an essay called Why I Am a Conscientious Objector to the Affordable Care Act. And we're welcoming your questions and views for her. What do you think about her reasons why she didn't sign up for health insurance under the ACA. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. David on Facebook writes, those who want nationalized health care and don't support the ACA don't even know it's all for them. It's built to collapse so we can look for something better, in quotation marks. Dr. Flowers, what's your reaction to that?
Well, the law is not designed to actually meet the goals that we've heard put forth. You know, so much early on we heard them saying that it's going to be universal, affordable, guaranteed health care. It certainly is not going to do that, and we can look at Massachusetts as a model to see, you know, kind of down the road what we're going to end up with. I think that we need to be organizing right now, though, for a national health care program, because every year that we wait, it means more people are delaying care that they need, are suffering and dying from preventable causes. So he's correct that the law, I think, ultimately is going to become too burdensome, too expensive, and it will fail.
Let's go next to Greg in Milwaukee. Hello, Greg.
Hello, and good morning. I agree with you totally that this Affordable Care Act isn't perfect. The only thing they could get through, when Clinton tried to get it through, you saw the Republican Party. They stand in unison. They vote as one unit. They're too powerful. We need to get them all out of office, and then we might get somewhere. I mean, look at what Ryan's trying to do. Cut out the Affordable Care Act, cut out food stamps, so he can give more tax breaks to the rich. And that's what's going on. Now, look what Walker did with cutting people off of health care and giving it back in the form of tax breaks to the rich. We have to get every single Republican out of office, because that's the only way we're going to have a government of the people, by the people, and for the people.
And do you agree, Dr. Flowers?
Well, no, actually, the Republicans didn't play a role in stopping the Affordable Care Act. It was actually no Republicans voted for it. The agenda for what was going to be in the Affordable Care Act was set before President Obama was even in office. The white paper that was written in late 2008 was what was used as really the design of what the ultimate bill was going to be. There was a Democrat majority in the House and the Senate. They were the only ones that voted for it. So we had an opportunity to have a debate at that time about what type of health system would be the best system, and that's what we were working to do. I was in Congress almost every day down there, educating, lobbying, very active in that process, trying to get the single-payer voice through, and we were very much excluded because it wasn't what the White House wanted. It wasn't what the administration wanted. They wanted this Affordable Care Act. So I think we had that opportunity. It was squandered because a lot of, you know, tens of millions of dollars actually were spent to create this group, Healthcare for America Now, and get people all excited about something called the public option. But even that was never meant to be in the final legislation. We knew that in March of 2009, that was a bargaining chip that they were going to throw out of the legislation. So that whole reform process showed me that it's not who's in office. Democrats didn't do it. The Republicans definitely won't do it. It's up to people to set that agenda, and we can't be fooled this time. We can't be bought off with false solutions like a public option. We've got to understand what's really going to work and fight for that.
But most of the Republican objections to the Affordable Care Act is that this is government-run health care, that this is, you know, this is socialism. It's and, you know, that's what a lot of people believe.
Right. That's, you know, so much misinformation has been given out there, you know, from both sides into the public dialogue, which is why we really need to have honest discussions. There's a lot, you know, and this is a tactic that's been used throughout time. There's a lot of distraction that goes on to keep the American public from having the real dialogue for months. Well, you know, for more than months now, we've been talking about how many people are enrolled and are enough young people signing up, but we're not talking about what kind of plans are people buying. Are those plans protective? Will they be able to afford health care? Are we going to stop medical bankruptcies? Are our health outcomes going to improve? Those are the conversations that we're not having that really need to be in the public dialogue.
Scott in Madison is with us. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Joy.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. And a simple question for the good doctor. If right now we would take all of your ideas, roll them up in one package, and hand them to the Democrats or Republicans, which one do you think would jump on your program first?
Well, obviously neither would, because we've had H.R. 677.
Obviously, who would?
Neither the Democrats or the Republicans, because we've had a piece of legislation, H.R. 676, the Expanded and Improved Medicare Act, that's been introduced in Congress every year since 2003. And in 2009, 2010, when the Affordable Care Act was being put together, the Democrats ran away from it. And this is something that they had been championing before that. So it's not who's in Congress. It's what are the people going to do? Are we going to use our power, which is stronger than them, to organize and put the pressure on and insist on a real solution?
Scott, what was it that you wanted to share, though?
I guess I don't understand what the doctor is fighting for.
Single-payer health care. Single-payer health care, Scott.
Single-payer health care. If you step into a single-payer health care system like they have in England, to get simple medical procedures, you're looking at 4, 6 to 10 to 12 months. If they feel that you're basically not worthy in your health of having it, you don't get it. I guess what we've always done here in the United States, I've always paid for health care, always. And I've paid for what I wanted, and I know many people who had not bothered to pay for it that still have health care. Where do we stop to the idea that everyone owes, you know, we owe everyone something? I'm sorry, I don't see this. I don't see the Affordable Health Care Act, but I don't see the doctor's side of it, where we should allow one person to decide everything. If you want a single-payer healthcare system, isn't that the same thing that we're getting through the government? Because the government is setting the standards of something that's outdated, antiquated, and like the doctor is saying, she's been fighting for 10 years, and why are we worrying about 2003 with a bill that failed when it's 2014 and we're 10 years down the road? Where are we going with this? Isn't it time to say, okay, we'll try years first for a year and see what happens, or 2 years. $1 trillion? What is $1 trillion anymore? We've blown.
All right, Scott, we're kind of jumping around here. Let's talk about, first he was saying that single-payer health care systems in other countries aren't a panacea, Dr. Flowers.
Well, first, we do need to understand that no system is perfect. But if you look at the evidence of what works, it's solidly clear that we've been using a market-based system for the past 40 years. We have the most expensive healthcare system in the world by far. We leave the most people out. We're ranked 37th overall for our system. Our health outcomes are poor. Our life expectancies are falling. If you look at countries that have a single-payer type of universal system that where the bottom line is health, not profit as ours is, you see that they spend less, their health outcomes are better, their life expectancies are better. So we know that this is what works. Even if we had, during the health reform process, had a debate about the systems that existed currently in the United States, we have the VA system, the Medicare system, and our private insurances, we would see that the Medicare, traditional Medicare, and the VA are more efficient and have better outcomes than our private insurance system. But what we chose to do is to prop up the private insurance system and actually socialize that. So we're subsidizing private insurances, and the government is taking on all of the risk for them by reinsuring them. So we're propping up the most inefficient and the one part of the system that actually functions not to pay for health care, but to deny and restrict health care so that they can make a profit.
Why not see if the Affordable Care Act will help, is another point he made.
I'm sorry, what was
he
that?
Said, he said, why not give the ACA some time to see if it'll work?
Oh, because we already know that the way they structured it, that it won't work. And then we can also look at Massachusetts, which has had a similar piece of legislation since 2006. Their most recent reports show that the total rise in cost for their system is based on the increase in cost of services and not the increased use of services. You want a healthcare system where, when we have such of a healthcare need here, so many people that are not getting care, we need to see our service usage actually go up, but that isn't happening under that system. And they also found that having a high income or being insured was not protective against having financial problems due to medical debt.
We have just a minute before a news break. Can you quickly address his point, hey, he pays for his own health care. Everybody should just take care of themselves.
That's a backwards way to look at it, because we don't, each of us, have the resources to, if we have something catastrophic happen, be able to handle that. And we can look at all the medical bankruptcies that are happening in this country. And we can talk more about that, if you'd like, after the break, about what actually makes sense if you want to have a healthcare system that's about health.
We'll do that. We are talking with Dr. Margaret Flowers. She is an advocate for a single-payer healthcare system, and she is a conscientious objector to the Affordable Care Act. She did not sign up for health insurance under the ACA when the deadline passed this week. We're finding out why, and we're welcoming your thoughts and questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. The deadline to sign up for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act was Monday. And we would like to hear from you if you signed up or if you didn't, or your thoughts and questions about whether or not we will be better off under the ACA than we were before, or if you think this is even worse and why. We are talking with a guest physician this hour who is uninsured and who has not signed up for health insurance under the ACA. We are talking with her about why she calls herself a conscientious objector to the ACA. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Wednesday, April 2nd. Dr. Margaret Flowers is an advocate for a single-payer healthcare system, and she said she cannot, in good conscience, give money to the private insurance industry that she wants to eliminate. What's your reaction to that? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Vince in Elm Grove is with us now. Hi, Vince.
Hi. I sometimes wonder about the intelligence of the American people. These people that, first of all, I've experienced health care in other countries for years, and they are excellent, and I can speak for one in Canada. The reality is in Canada that even if you have serious problems, and they've been doing this for years, if there is a backlog, they send people to this country for those procedures. And hospitals in this country are very happy to have that business from Canada, and Canadian government will pay the hospital directly. The idea of socialized, if this is socialism, of course it's a part of socialism, but we have socialized education, we have social security. I can't imagine these people that complain about that wouldn't see that die. Also, our representatives in Congress all have a single-payer system. They're all under a single-payer system. What right do they have to deny that to the rest of the country if they have it themselves? I don't know when we're going to wake up in this country and recognize how foolish we are. And the other thing is, too, you constantly hear advertising about hospitals. They're out there as if they were selling widgets or furniture or something, rather than, you know, in other words, they compete with another. There seems to be a hospital in every corner now. It's really, I mean, the whole system is totally, absolutely out of control.
Yeah, let me ask you, Vince, our caller before news was complaining about single-payer systems. I think he was saying in Great Britain, but he was talking about long lines for health care and rationing and the government deciding if you get health, if you get a health procedure or not. Is that the way it is in Canada?
No. No, it's not. There were problems back in the 90s, and I remember experiencing the system when I came back here, because Clinton was just trying to sell his system, and there's all these lies about how the Canadian system doesn't work. And it's just something that I don't know exactly why we cannot comprehend the fact that we are alone in this, that we are still spending, as your guest said, 2.5 times as much as other countries on the very thing that all of us, I think, would recognize is a right. It's not a privilege. In other words, one thing to go around buying a car and you know, essentially some kind of a product like that that anyone would agree, you know, you go around and see that gets the cheapest price. But to sell health care on the same level as something, as I said, I think is as much a right as, say, Social Security or public education. Of course, we tend to be doing that now with these charter schools. In other words, these are things that we expect our taxpayers or our taxes to pay. And again, as I said, again, the very people that are denying this to the American people, people in Congress, have a single-payer system. When are we going to wake up?
Dr. Flowers.
Yes, I would love to comment on that, and thank you for calling in, because there is misinformation about other countries that have these types of systems. It's done intentionally. I remember being in Washington in 2009, and there was a kickoff party for a new group that basically was going to go around to other countries and find horror stories and then really play those up in the media or create horror stories and just to scare Americans away from a real healthcare type of system. Rationing exists everywhere, but the way that we ration healthcare in the United States is the most cruelest way. It's based on ability to pay. So what we have is people self-rationing. In 2012, 80 million people in the United States went without healthcare. These are both insured and uninsured, because of the cost of the care. They couldn't afford the upfront out-of-pocket deductibles and co-pays to do that. In, you know, other countries, there are lines for some things. Not if you have an emergent or urgent type of condition, then your care is taken care of right away. There might be some lines for some things, but systems are always working to decrease that. In the United States, we have 48 million people who can't even get into a line. The line doesn't exist because we don't have a universal system.
Exactly what do we mean when you say a Medicare for all or a single payer system or a national health program? What kind of health care system do you want to see?
So there's a piece of legislation called H.R. 676, the Expanded and Improved Medicare for All Act, and it outlines what that system would look like. It was put together by a working group of physicians from the United States who are experts in health policy and health finance. And it creates essentially like our traditional Medicare, but it would be that every person would be in a system from the time that they're born until the time that they die, one single system, one set of rules. It's paid for upfront through taxes, and then it pays for that system. It builds the hospitals. It pays for the technology. It pays directly for the care. Some advantages, and actually I should also mention that it's comprehensive. All medically necessary care should be covered. The reason for that is when you start introducing supplemental private insurances, you add much more cost to the system. If we used just a single-payer system where the government pays the health professionals directly, our administrative costs could be definitely less than 10%, possibly less than 5%. Right now we're spending probably more than a third of our healthcare dollars on just bureaucracy, just administration. A single-payer system would also get rid of co-pays and deductibles so that there aren't any barriers to care. If you look, you know, at our economic situation right now, where half of our population is in poverty, people just don't have the money for co-pays, and so they don't get care. But then if their condition worsens, they show up at the hospital, then it's much more expensive. We would spend less and have a healthier population if we take away those barriers to care.
Will we be able to afford the taxes to pay for such a system?
Yes, yeah, so, you know, we're already spending more than we need to be spending on health care. So actually a single-payer system would allow us to control our health spending and bring those costs down. We pay the most for healthcare services. We pay the most for pharmaceuticals because we don't have a rational way of negotiating for reasonable prices for those things. So, yes, absolutely. Those studies have been done looking at financing single-payer systems, looking at how much they would cost. And, in fact, it's been shown over and over again that we can do it for the amount of money that we're spending now and that it would actually save money in the long run.
If people, a listener sent this email, if people understood fully how insurance works, would they still oppose a universal single-payer system?
Right, because the bottom line for private health insurers is to make a profit. It's a hugely profitable industry. One of our most profitable CEOs of the private insurance companies make tremendous amounts of money, and they do that by designing policies that are complicated. They also they behave very poorly. They'll, in my own state of Maryland, where we looked at the insurers, they will bill people for things that are supposed to be covered, you know, assuming that people don't really read all the fine print and know that those things need to be covered. They'll we caught one company that just every one out of five claims that came in, even though it was a legitimate claim, they would just deny it. We know that in places like New York City, insurance companies will deny claims based on neighborhoods that have lower incomes because they know people in those neighborhoods are not going to have the resources to fight back. So we just see really shady practices, corrupt practices by the insurance companies designed to pay for as little care as they can. And when I was practicing as a physician, I left to advocate full-time. I practiced for 15 years. We were constantly fighting with the insurance companies to get them to pay for care that our patients needed. And we're fighting with people who have no medical knowledge that are trying to tell doctors what our patients can and can't have, not on the basis of what those patients need, but just, you know, what can the insurance companies get away with denying? So it's a system that's not based on health. It's the opposite of that. It's based on profit, and we need to change that.
Camille in New Berlin is with us. Hello, Camille.
Hi, thank you for taking my call this morning. You mentioned that we have the power. First of all, I agree with the previous caller that said that in order to make any significant changes, we are going to have to get rid of the Republican Party. But what, if you said we have the power to make these changes, what power do you see us wielding other than the polls in which we have only two choices, Democrat and Republican?
Yeah, we live in a system that's kind of, I call it a managed democracy. We don't really have choices because the candidates are chosen for us. And you know, in terms of most of the candidates, they're already, you know, chosen by Wall Street. They're the ones that are friendly to kind of the big corporations and not people that really represent what the public wants. So it's a difficult situation. It's why one of the organizations that I founded is called Popular Resistance, because it's was founded to help people see that we have kind of a broad social, environmental, and economic justice movement that's growing up in the United States, but it's not covered, it's not talked about, so people don't see it. And on our popularresistance.org, we provide stories every day of actions that people are taking. We have been able to recently wield some power. It's easier to stop things. So we stopped, you know, the attack on Syria. That was really significant. We're starting to shape the public dialogue. You hear candidates are talking more and more about things that they wouldn't talk about before, like wealth inequality. We have been fighting to stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership, this huge trade agreement that Obama is negotiating that would be much worse for people in the United States if it actually goes through. It would lower our wages and remove, you know, protection of food safety and raise the cost of medicine and things like that. And so far, we've been successful at stopping that. So we're starting to see that our power is building. If we organize and we see that healthcare is part of a broader social, economic, and environmental justice movement, we can influence our members of Congress, whoever's in there, to do what we want them to do. Ultimately, it comes down to they rely on our votes. And they're also afraid of people, you know, shaming them or really standing up to them and calling them out for the practices that they're doing.
We do have
organized to do that.
Thanks, Camille, for the call. We do have a link to popularresistance.org on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And on that link, you will also find Dr. Margaret Flowers' essay, Why I Am a Conscientious Objector to the ACA. And that's what we're talking about this hour. And we're welcoming your questions for her. Do you consider yourself a conscientious objector to the Affordable Care Act? Did you sign up for health care or not. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 9 minutes before 7 on this Wednesday, April 2nd. We are talking with Dr. Margaret Flowers, who is the National Board Advisor for Physicians for a National Health Program. She recently wrote an essay called Why I Am a Conscientious Objector to the ACA. She is uninsured, and she's telling us why she has not signed up for insurance under the ACA, and telling us why she is advocating for a single-payer or a Medicare-for-all healthcare system. Let's take another caller, Troy in Milwaukee. Hello, Troy.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I agree with a lot of things that the caller's saying, but I just want to make it from a perspective of somebody that's got four children. And I was on voucher care because I qualified for being low income, meeting the poverty requirements, and I have a degree, I have a job. And the way this affects someone like me is, Walker just passed something where a lot of individuals got things to the mail saying that we're off voucher care now, so we're unable to collect voucher care because he refused a certain part of the Affordable Care Act. And because of this, the option that we have is I have to go through the private of my job to use that insurance, which I clearly, with the co-pays and things, can't afford. And at least through the Affordable Care Act, I can get fees that are within reason that I can pay. It's not where I would like it to be, but if I left it up to, if it was up to Walker and Ryan, I would, at this point, then I would be just forced strictly to go through my work insurance, which would be a lot more expensive. So it's one of those deals where right now, for now, it's a starting point for me to be able to afford. I mean, if we're pushing for a national health care, you know, that could be 5-6 years down the road, and in the meantime, you know, my kids are growing up. So the reality of it is, I'm better off with it right now than if I left it up to the Republican Party. I would have nothing.
Yeah. Dr. Flowers?
Well, there's no doubt that Walker's been a big problem in terms of health care in the state of Wisconsin. And again, this is a decision that people have to make on their own. Some people are going to be helped by the Affordable Care Act. There's no question of that. But overall, when we look at the big picture, it's a huge transfer of our public dollars to the private industry. They've been working around all of the regulations so that they can continue to do what they do, which is to deny coverage to people that need it, to cherry pick the healthiest people. At the bottom line for private insurance companies is that these plans are a product. If they don't make a profit, they're going to drop them. And that's the wrong overall model. So I'm glad that, you know, that your listener is able to get affordable insurance. I hope that in the case of an emergency that it will actually protect his family from financial ruin. There's no guarantee of that, unfortunately, in this current system. So the bottom line is that we just have to recognize that this is the opposite of what we need in this country, that there is a solution that would work, and organize to support that solution, and let's make it happen. We can do that.
Yeah. But why haven't we been able to make that happen after all these years? A previous caller brought up Hillary Clinton's attempt to try to change something. The Affordable Care Act did have the intention of at least having that public option, but you said it wasn't. It was meant to just be a bargaining chip. But it still there just has been a lot of attempts to try to get single payer in this country, but they've all failed. Why do they continue to fail?
Yeah, but it's always that way when you're talking about something that's a huge change. I mean, look at how long it took to get rid of slavery and to work for women's rights and civil rights. These struggles are always long-term struggles, but I see real progress being made. There's a number of states, and my state, Maryland, is one of them, that has a health care as a human right campaign where people are really getting a good political education, understanding how the system does and doesn't work, understanding what type of health system it is that we need, and are organizing to build a grassroots movement to put pressure on for that. So one of the a couple of the mistakes that I saw during 2009-2010 that stopped the single-payer movement were groups that aligned themselves with political parties, so that the agenda of the group was the agenda of the political party and not the agenda that group needed to have. So as Obamacare got worse and worse, as it was being, you know, going through the process in Congress, we saw all of these Democrat-leaning groups supporting it. It all became the issue of the president's reputation and not what health policy we needed to have in this country. So we need to be independent of party when we're pushing for this issue. It's whoever's in office needs to do the right thing. We also need to be clear about what the solution is, because so many people were fooled with this idea of a public option, which is not really a solution. It wasn't even meant to be in the final legislation, but if it had been, it was not going to solve the problem that we have. So we've got to understand what works and what doesn't. And we've got to be uncompromising. We are always told that politics is a game of compromise, but Gandhi said on fundamentals, you can't compromise. It's all give and no take. So when it comes to healthcare in this country, the most fundamental step that we need to take is to create a universal nonprofit system that's about health, so that then we can start to address a lot of the other things that we need to deal with in this country to improve our health. But that's the bottom line. So independence, clarity, and uncompromising are the principles that we need to follow if we want to get real health reform.
Christopher in De Pere. Hi, Christopher.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. Hey, I had a very negative experience trying to sign up online. What happened with me was I had family insurance. My wife works full time for a big company. I work for a small company. We have two kids, and we always had family insurance. Well, we got the letter saying that I'm removed because I work full time, and I'm offered insurance through my employer, no matter how much it was.
Yeah.
So I had to go on the exchange, and I was looking through all the information. I entered my information, and it got so personal where it wanted, like, my color, what race I am, what religion I am, all this nonsense. I went back. I said, I'm not entering. I'm not signing up.
Yeah, so you did not sign up for it?
No. And there's also a small link on the exchange because I want to know if I qualify. I want to know if I qualify for subsidies. As soon as I entered, yeah. I work full-time with insurance offered, and my wife works full-time with insurance offered. You don't get anything.
Yeah. I'm sorry that we don't have more time for the call, Christopher. Just wrapping up in less than a minute, Dr. Flowers, are you optimistic that single-payer will one day come to this country?
Well, it will come if we organize to make it come. That's the only way it's ever going to get put on the table. And just quickly to say that under a single-payer system, everybody would automatically be in. There would be no, you know, computer programs where you have to, you know, sign up. Everybody would just be automatically in the system.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Margaret Flowers. Thanks very much to Cynthia Schuster and to Robin Sherry for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.